This is the Social Link Podcast, episode 16.
The Return of Square Enix.
On the whole moment till now, break away. Oh, let me out. Can you let me out? Can you set me free from this stuck in the world? Save me the last bit in the
Welcome to another episode of the Social Link Podcast. This is Alex.
This is Anthony.
What's going on, man?
Not a whole lot. Just chilling. What about you?
Considering this is the second time we restarted. Technically, this is the third time that we're recording this episode because we just weren't happy with the quality of the last one and the one before. So we're going to try again because, practice makes perfect.
And to be honest, I think the last time we recorded, not the last time, I think we went way off topic, so let's go on topic.
Yeah. So what is the topic this week?
Well, we're not going to do what you're playing. We're not going to do any of that, right?
Right.
What we're going to do is we're going to dedicate a whole episode just talking about Square Enix, because Alex and I feel it's very imperative to talk about Square Enix.
Well, it's also timely because you've just finished a Square Enix game. I am currently playing a Square Enix game.
I'm about to finish another Square Enix game, and I finished an old one about a month ago, so...
Yeah. So I think, needless to say, Square Enix is somewhat back, or is coming back into the limelight. I mean, if anything, their previous sales, kind of like investor call, kind of like said, like, yeah, by the way, we're making money now, thanks to Final Fantasy XIV, Bravely Default, the sales of Thief, and Tomb Raider Definitive Edition.
I gotcha.
Yeah. So they're slowly coming back.
What's funny is they have, with Tomb Raider, they have some strong fucking brands now.
Mm-hmm.
They have their own brands. I mean, Kingdom Hearts. They have the Final Fantasy brand, they have the Dragon Quest brand, and then, of course, they have all the Enix when the merger happened. What was it, 2008, 2009?
Oh, something along those lines.
They have the, not the Square Enix, original Square Enix merging, but who was the company?
You're talking about Eidos.
Yeah, the Eidos. When Eidos happened, they got all those Eidos brands, and Eidos was kind of in a slump.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, look at the quality of the Tomb Raider games at that time.
Yeah.
Not very good. And Tomb Raider was weird because I think they had rebooted it, two, three times already?
They kind of had the Anniversary Edition. They started with the Anniversary Edition, and actually before that they started with Legend, then the Anniversary Edition, then they've tried like Underworld, and it just wasn't hitting critical mass like it was before. I guess like there's something with the character that just did not evolve, and people just kind of stopped paying attention, and it didn't grow up, while games like Uncharted started showing up and kind of showing like, hey, we can make our own stamp on, a whole exploration thing, and we can make it a little bit better, make it a little bit more action-packed, make it a little bit more Hollywood-like. So
yeah, that's kind of what they did. And then in the meantime, like for the last couple of years, Square Enix kind of floundered. They didn't know exactly what to do. Mm-hmm. It seemed like Final Fantasy was caught in an identity crisis. Final Fantasy, they didn't know what to do with their other brands. We're going to talk about Bravely Default, of course, here as well. I think that's important.
Mm-hmm.
I think with Bravely Default 2, to be honest, is it's a Final Fantasy game under the name of a new IP.
Yeah, a lot of people kind of consider Bravely Default as a Final Fantasy game. Like, if you look at some of the listings and stuff like that, like, it's kind of really fascinating to kind of note. There's just so many similarities between the two that you can't really ignore that Bravely Default that has had its, heart and mind, like, set on being a Final Fantasy, but for some reason, it didn't make it.
Yeah, it's weird because, you didn't play the game as much as I have. You know, mm-hmm. you probably played like 5 hours or something, if even. You know, I'm 74 hours in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you thematically and everything, you know, it's a Final Fantasy game. Item names are the same. Phoenix Down, Elixirs, High Potion, Potion. Spells are the same. Cure, Cura, Curaga. You know, classes. You know, White Mage, Black Mage. They kind of, you know, retain the classic designs of those. You know, Black Knight. Black Knights look like Cecil. You know, type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Four Warriors of Light. A terminology used later in the game. You know, crystals. Four elemental crystals that run the world. Mm-hmm. In darkness. That type of thing. The only thing really missing is Moogles, Chocobos, and a Cid. If you would add those, you might as well have named it a Final Fantasy.
Right.
You know, maybe that's the only thing that's really keeping it from being a Final Fantasy, I guess.
Yeah.
In Square Enix. But you might as well call it a fucking Final Fantasy.
Yeah. Again, like, a lot of people considered it as, like, a Final Fantasy game, even though it doesn't bear the name. I mean, even from the style of the actual logo itself, you know, could very well have been, you know, Final Fantasy game, pretty much. So, I mean, you pretty much played, what, like, 70 hours of this game already?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, yep. I guess my question is, like, how do you actually, you know, like, get the motivation to kind of pick it up every single day? And, you know, because, I mean, my whole problem with the game is it's very grind-heavy right now. And it's very, very grind-heavy, especially when you're at the level where I'm at, which I've mentioned before. I was, like, in a desert area. What is the most rewarding part about Bravely Default for you?
The story, which surprised the fuck out of me. Because the game is divided up into 8 chapters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's be honest, those first couple chapters, characters are likable enough to kind of give a shit at that point, but they're not like... And even as much as I hate when people use cliches against them, those four characters are, in those early chapters, heavy cliches.
Yeah.
I will even say that. A little too thick, because you can disguise a cliche. And I'm always the guy who says, oh, JRPGs aren't full of cliches, and I can defend anyone, but even at the beginning of this game, right? And tell me, you will be honest with me, and I can agree with you at this point. You didn't give a shit about the characters, right?
Not really. I mean, I know that they have a plight, but it's like, and they have some sort of mystery involved, and I thought that I would kind of stick with it throughout the adventure, but it was like, it wasn't... The story elements, I personally feel, were way too far apart from each other for me to give a shit.
Right, right. And I do agree. What kept me going, though, at that point was the gameplay, which was just so deep, mm-hmm. you know? But I will say this, as I've said before. As much as I love Bravely Default, its online features are neat and maybe the closest thing to revolutionary. But I will say this. The game is not revolutionary as some people claim it is. It's an old-school RPG. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Accept it for what it is. It's not. I'm surprised that this game even sold, because this game has so many old school designs that many modern JRPGs have eschewed in order to reach a broader audience. You know, you have world map. You have the fucking random encounter. This is the first game I have played in almost a decade, and maybe I'm wrong. But the first game in over almost a decade that I have played without random encounters.
Without?
With random encounters. Excuse me. With. Because the Tales games don't have them. Fuck, what was that game? I forgot, but just whatever. You know, most games don't. Most JRPGs don't have random encounters.
Probably not that important.
Yeah, probably not that important, but. Yeah, that's a very old school design. You know, the game does have save points, but here's something I've learned. It autosaves. Whenever you like leave a dungeon floor, it'll autosave.
Hmm.
So it autosaves like every time. Anytime you leave a room or an area, it will autosave the game. Mm-hmm. Even if you're not even near a save point.
Okay.
So it's got some modernness to it. But it is what it is. It is a very grind-heavy game.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to lower the difficulty in a later boss in the game, and it's still fucking hard.
Hmm.
So, but I don't mind it. What motivated me, though, as far as the story goes, is the characters are, you know, you have Ringabel, womanizer character, we've seen that, you know, and you can have art, you can have your comic relief character that you got to flesh him out, right?
Mm-hmm.
As the story progresses, though, once you get to the end of chapter 4, this is where the game kind of becomes a mixed bag for me. Explain why. The story becomes so much fucking more interesting because I feel that, here's the thing, I will admit this, Tiz is probably the least developed character, but he's likable enough for a main character, right?
Right.
It's the other three, specifically Ringabel and Adia, specifically Ringabel, that become much interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Much interesting, because what happens is, and I'm not going to go spoiler, but the game, the first four chapters, you heal the, you know, when the water, when, you know, that type of stuff. You actually travel alternate realities.
Hmm.
Yep. So the next four chapters are alternate realities. But here's where the but comes in. On a design standpoint, not executed so well. Story-wise, yes, but not gameplay-wise. So let me explain why. It's when you go to the alternate realities, you have to go back and you have to restore all four crystals. Now, you don't go through all the story stuff or all the dungeons. Dungeons are cleared out. You could just go and face the boss, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it does still get monotonous. The bosses are harder. You have to fight the same four bosses, awakening the crystal, right?
Right.
It does get monotonous. I will concede that point. And there's not really a whole lot much difference to the world. Like, you know, it's not like Chrono Cross. You remember that alternate reality?
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, Serge or Sergey or whatever the fuck his name was, one reality he was dead, one reality he was alive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not like that. I wish they would have done more things like that. So I will say they got a little bit, they got lazy on that part.
Okay.
On that part, okay? So, basically, you do that for the next four chapters, but the motivation for me was the story, and the gameplay was still fun. You know, the battle system, I still enjoyed it. I will agree with you, though. Job system, I love it, but it's not for everyone. It's a very
old specific job system.
Yeah, well, this is the traditional job system. So, that's what you mean by specific, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're talking old school, yeah, the original stuff. Like, there's some minor tweaks to it, but yeah, it's pretty much a job system.
Yeah, 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 it is pretty much what it is. But other than that, you know, I wish I could say more about the story. I know you don't give a shit about spoilers, correct? But our audience does, so I'm not going to say.
Right.
But I will say that story is just so fucking cool. It just surprised me because I didn't expect anything. I thought it was just like, when I reach chapter 4, it seems like the game's going to end and you're like, oh, you know, let's fight the evil that's causing this. No, that's not what happens.
Mm-hmm.
You find out things. And then one of your enemies, there's a sort of betrayal that happens. And it's the enemy, the person, character that you don't even know, think it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, its story is up there. Like, it has that classic Squaresoft feel that storyline does. It does. I will concede that, my friend.
Hmm.
I will say that. It has the classic Square Enix feel. And I, for one, am happy about
it. Well, I mean, you, seeing as how you have more of a patience with the gameplay than me, I believe you as far as that's concerned.
Well, I know you're not going to proceed further in the game.
It's tough, man. I mean, especially when you have a lot of other kind of titles that are coming out, especially since we're jumping into the summer with a pretty big game already, and we're talking about Watch Dogs. And I'm not even going to talk about Transistor in this podcast because that's not a Square Enix game, but also it is one of the bigger titles of, you know, this month, whether people believe it or not. And it's
next
a mini title.
A week from what we're recording is a big release. week, because you got Watch Dogs comes out next week, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Mario Kart that comes out, too.
Mm-hmm. Same so day, for, I think.
Yeah, like, I think next Friday, the 30th.
Mm-hmm.
So you have Mario Kart that comes out, and then you have Watch Dogs. And then when does Transistor come out next week as well?
It's out already.
Okay, see, there you got that. So next, yeah, and especially next week, it's a big release week, so.
Mm-hmm.
I just, you know, as far as modern games go, you know, you and I have had this conversation, want me to keep up day to day. I'm going to keep up to date in my own little way, still going by the challenge, of course. I give a shit about Mario Kart. You don't, right?
Nope.
So I'm going to play that game. You're going to play Watch Dogs, and, you know, we'll talk about those. But yeah, let's talk.
I think that it's really important to me, though, like, as, you know, like, even if you don't like it, right? Like, even if you, like, I don't know, Gamefly it and stuff, at the very least, like, you'll know, like, all right, well, I didn't like that. You know, I played that game back in Games and Me. I bought everything. That was, like, our previous website. I bought every single game, and I thought that because I had every single game, people would be more inclined to check it out, but chances are people's tastes are a lot stronger than their curiosity.
I got jaded. I used to buy everything too.
Mm-hmm.
To be fair, I did. And I've gotten jaded because I found I was buying a bunch of games that I just don't like. So while I understand your point of view, I'll keep an open mind. Like Watch Dogs, I'm not going to dismiss completely.
Mm-hmm. I'm still very kind of weird about that game. So, I mean, I'll be able to tell you whether that game is good or not when I do get it. I think I'm going to get it for my birthday.
Okay. Let me ask you this about Watch Dogs.
Sure.
Because I still got some stuff to talk about Bravely. Let me ask you this. With Watch Dogs, I've heard some of the reviews, now I could be wrong, aren't very good for it. Am I right or wrong?
I haven't seen any reviews yet for the game, to be honest.
Okay, someone said there's a couple reviews and it's not looking good. But I would trust you because you're always on top of that shit. So
yeah, I don't think the embargo is up yet for the review because Wolfenstein just came out this week. So
oh, that's right.
So I mean, yeah, I don't think there's any reviews yet. I'm looking through it right now. There's none in my feed.
How does Wolfenstein sound? I was a little kid. I saw a trailer for that, and believe it or not, kind of piqued my interest a little bit.
Sean basically said that he likes it, but then again, like, his tastes are very weird. It is there's some websites that basically said that it's very human. Like, BJ Blazkowicz is very human in this, to which I'm like, what?
Wait, very human?
Yeah.
What does that mean? Like, it has a, like,
emotion.
Characters?
Yeah. Emotion. What? Yeah, it's weird, right? Like, thinking about it. Like, this is a dude who just kills Nazis. He's, like, he's brutal. And it's, like, what, he's gonna cry? I mean, it's, like, it's kind of, I don't know. And there's, like, skill progression, you know, to which I asked him, you know, kind of, like, the same question that I asked you when the previous time we recorded mm-hmm. this episode is, does the progression actually feel like it's making a difference? You know?
Yeah.
And we'll get to that later, of course. And he said, like, yeah, well, it looks like it did. I'm like, all right, well, you know, because, I mean, it is a $60 game. It does have a really large install. We're talking 47 gig install and a 2 gig patch. So, you know, you need a ton of space in order to get this thing to actually run on your platform of choice. So, yeah. Holy.
Okay, mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing about Wolfenstein real quick. Just out of curiosity. Well, not curiosity, but I gotta say this. It's you saying it has humanity to it is like adding a love triangle subplot to Doom. So, I'm like a little shocked by that.
I don't know about a love triangle. I mean, there is definitely those humanistic moments that paint BJ Blazkowicz is kind of this very human character with feelings and stuff, and I'm not sure how strong that is, like, you know, that's actually shown in the game, but if it were really that prevalent, I would imagine gifs of it actually showing up all over the place, like him crying or whatever.
The last Wolfenstein game I played was Wolfenstein RPG for the iPhone, which I love, and that game is so goofy.
Yeah.
It's an extremely goofy. They even have like a kicking chicken mini game. So
wow.
Goofy. Yeah. Anyway, back to Bravely Default. All the characters are very fleshed out. Speaking of human, they, you know, one of the things too, I will tell you this is with Ring a Bell, you kind of see, and you probably have seen this where you're at. He has a very hardcore attraction to Adia, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason for that than him just being a womanizer.
Okay.
That's how complex the story gets. There's actually a reason. And that character really, really changes a lot. You know, and I will say that this, his voice actor, real quick, too, is a voice actor I used to be very critical of. That was Spike Spencer, who voices Ring a Bell, and he does a very good job on it. I don't know who the other ones. Agnes's kind of annoys me a little bit. She's probably the weakest voice actor in the
mm-hmm.
game.
Yeah.
Because she overacts sometimes.
Right.
There's some overacting, but Ring a Bell, Adia is pretty good. Tiz is a subtle performance. Good for what the character is, because the character, again, he's not, you know, there's development of him and stuff, but he's not as interesting as, say, Ring a Bell. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and that surprised me. I was not, like, when I got to the to chapter 4, I was expecting, oh, they're just going to fight the great evil, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But they start playing with this concept. There's a plot twist. There's a betrayal. I mean, it's all very cool. Just the design's lazy. They could have done a better job on the alternate universes. Like, it should have felt like maybe, you know, like if you traveled to one town in the main world, maybe that town doesn't exist in another and it's destroyed. You know, stuff like that.
Oh, I see.
That's what I expect. Yeah, that's what I expect. Because when you travel in the alternate universe, everything is exactly the same.
Hmm.
It doesn't feel no different. Like, all, even the relationships are the same. It's like, oh, every character relationship is the same. You know, if it's an alternate reality, wouldn't this person be a little bit more different than that person?
So in other words, like, you know, the way that Chrono Cross handled alternate realities was a lot better than this game.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Hmm.
And I'm a guy who reads DC Comics who's known for their multiverse. So that's another tiff at, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Not that exaggerate as the DCU, you know, because that would take a lot of work for a game.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, maybe something more on the lines of, you know, maybe like Chrono Cross, something, you know.
So. Okay.
But I will say, I liked Bravely Default. I think it's a quality game. Right now, you know, I gave it a review. I will give it a solid 8. If this game had that issue resolved, it would probably be a 9, you know, because it's because of that story. But I will also say that this game, just, you know, as hyped as it is, I will tell people, if you have not played Bravely Default, don't go into it looking for something revolutionary, because I don't know why people are saying that. I love the game, but it's not revolutionary.
Right.
It's just not. It's a very good old school style RPG. If you like RPGs from like the, you know, PC Engine that are grind heavy, like Cosmic Fantasy or older Dragon Quest or stuff like that, you'll love this. But this is not, you know, the next coming of Final Fantasy VII like some people have made it out to be, which I have heard.
I would even go further and say, like, if you're a casual RPG fan, don't even pick it up.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with you. You know, just even, you know, as much as I love Chrono Trigger, play that if you've never played that, if you're casual.
Right.
Because that game's old. I love Chrono Trigger, but it's easier. And that's the difference between me and Alex, is that I'm a very hardcore, I like grinding, I like that type of stuff. And that's why it worked for me. I can understand why it doesn't work for Alex. But just, yeah, don't expect this to be revolutionary. And I don't know, why do you think people are saying that?
Because it brought back a lot of people into RPGs and stuff. Like, it makes a lot of sense, you know. Like, I don't know, I really don't know. It is really, really super old school. I don't get why people are like, oh yeah, this is innovative. I'm like, dude, the only thing that's innovative about it is you can close the clamshell casing for your 3DS and then like continue it later.
The only features are this, okay? The second secondary default, I always forget the name of it.
Bravely and Default?
Yeah, that extra second that you have to buy drinks for with real money, but or you can let your DS sleep. That's kind of an okay feature. There's there's some online features such as the rebuilding of the village, which I did complete, where you meet the traveler, you download friends, and then there's the friend the link, where if you link a friend, you can learn some of their abilities quicker, some of the job abilities quicker.
Right, yeah.
There's that, and then as you meet friends, like if I street past you, you can upload an attack and use, and I can summon your character's attack to aid me.
Mm.
But you know what? I don't even think that stuff's revolutionary. You know why? It sounds, and it's not the exact same stuff, but it sounds like stuff from Demon Souls, which came out like a Demon Souls-esque type of online system.
Mm-hmm.
Not exactly, not even, maybe not even closely similar, but kind of the same. Wouldn't you?
Right.
The concept. So I don't know. It's a great game. I love it personally, but I'm not going to recommend it for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
It gets an 8 out of 10, and all right. I am looking forward to the sequel.
Okay.
So that's all I got to say on that.
Cool.
So, Square Enix, you're doing a hell of a job.
That's one. That's one of the Square Enix games we're talking about this week.
Let's talk about your game.
Final Fantasy XIV, A Realm Reborn. It's important to add A Realm Reborn to really differentiate it from 1.0, as people would call it.
Okay, so what, being a complete total noob, what happened to 1.0? Why don't you enlighten the audience?
So, Final Fantasy XIV, the original, had some really interesting issues. For one, it suffers the same issue as Crisis before it. If you don't remember, Crisis was this really huge first-person shooter that Crytek was building that allegedly you need, you know, like computers in the future would need to be, you know, it would be future-proof and all that stuff. Final Fantasy XIV is the same way, but it suffers from the same folly that Crytek's Crisis had, which is they didn't really optimize it. So, in other words, like, they just left all the memory leaks, all the stuff that would basically break the game into it, and just, you know, it was just using too many resources that it's not supposed to. A lot of people, you know, in the forums right now were talking about how some of the characters in Final Fantasy XIV, the original, would basically, like, you know, won't stop on a dime. They have, like, a little animation that comes up. But that's, like, really taxing for a game.
Yep. Yeah. And I can see why people, you know, I remember I actually had a computer that ran Crysis back in 2000. I did.
But not at 60 frames per second, I bet.
No. It ran at 30 frames a second. But even getting it to run at 30 frames a second was a bitch, mm-hmm. as you may know. But let's go back to the release of Final Fantasy for the original version, real quick. Mm-hmm. 2010 was considered by many Final Fantasy fans as not a good year for that franchise. Okay, so you had Final Fantasy XIII that came out, which you don't hate, but you don't like, correct?
There are aspects of it that I really like, as a whole, like, I can't play through it.
Okay, and I like it. I think it's a strong game. I think it's a good, good solid Final Fantasy, but not, by far, not the best that series has to offer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, for me, like, it doesn't rank anything, you know, from... It doesn't rank anything, like, between Final Fantasy IV, skipping 5, all the way up to 10, and then... actually, all the way up to 12. So, 4, 6 to 12, it doesn't even rank within that.
I find it funny, I like how everyone skips 5.
Yeah, I know, right?
5's not that bad, but it's not, you know, I would rank it, I would, you know what, I would rank 13 along the same lines as 5.
But where would that be, like, in your hierarchy?
Okay, so for my hierarchy, it would be, you know, my top, right? 6.
Mm-hmm.
6 my top. I announced that 10 moved to my second.
Mm-hmm.
7's on my third. 9's my fourth. 4 is below 9,
mm-hmm.
and then 8 kind of in, you know, right, the top 5, mm-hmm. and then probably 13 and 6. And,
okay.
And then, you know, 3, it's 3, 12, you know, but at the very bottom is 12.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? No. That's being mean. Two's on the bottom because two is such a broken game. And the NES final, the Famicom NES.
Mm-hmm.
Famicom Final Fantasy II. That game's broken as shit. But, yeah, so that's my hierarchy. Let's get yours, and then we'll go. I'll ask you a question about Final Fantasy.
Well, six has always, you know, been my highest. I don't really have, like an order, but I do know my favorites. Definitely, 13 would probably be at the bottom of my list, let's put it that way.
Okay.
Yeah. Probably, you know, 2 would probably be below that, but 13 is immediately after that.
About 7, the controversial one, I call it, because everyone...
7, you know, 7 is probably within my top 10.
7's a damn good one.
Yeah. So. I mean, it's obviously, the translation is completely, like, old now, and it's completely outdated. It didn't age well. But, you know, but the Materia system is one of the most enjoyable systems I've ever played in, you know, Final Fantasy.
Yeah. And mind you, that's only count. My list only counted main ones. If I could fit in a spinoff, I would actually put Tactics in my top 5 mm-hmm. and replace maybe.
Yeah.
With Tactics, but yeah. That's main. So let's talk about 14, Realm Reborn. Mm-hmm. So now 1.0 is dead.
Yeah. It's interesting because. If you search on YouTube, Final Fantasy 1.0 shutdown or, you know, whatever, you can actually see, what happened during the last few minutes of the game. And this is something that's really interesting. So there's a place in a game called Mordona and actually all over the world, basically this happened. So the moon in the game started getting bigger and bigger in subsequent patches, and they were building this up for like several patches all the way up until the last patch.
When did this occur?
This occurred in, I want to say, in 2012, around October 2012, and basically, like, they had this event where something weird is going on. Basically, like, high-level monsters were showing up in areas that they're not supposed to be in. So, basically, killing a lot of low-level people, you know, on purpose. And all of a sudden, this moon was just getting closer and closer up until it got to a point where it's almost so close to the Earth that you could see, like, the clouds swirling around it. And it's like, really red as, like, blood. And it's, like, you know, and you can... And up to the point where every single area music was replaced by this very haunting music, this haunting song.
Like the meteor. When the old, you know, world map music in Final Fantasy VII is replaced by the meteor music after it's summoned.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what happened. And you heard that from everywhere. So this quest happened where Louis Sois, which is, I want to say it's one of the leaders of the game, one of the heroes of the game, basically said that there are 12 points in the game where you have to pray. And essentially, if you actually pray to a bad guy, you basically get killed right away. And you can gesture pray/pray and all that stuff. You know, but there are moments where you need to build up the, you know, to this kind of ether, the energy of the ether, in order to kind of, you know, help, you know, the heroes fight the bad guy, whoever it's going to be. And people thought that, you know, that Dalamud, which is that's the moon that's crashing into the Earth. It's a moon that's crashing into the Earth, first of all.
Not a meteor, a moon.
Not a meteor. A moon. And this was basically planned by one of the main bad guys of the game, who escapes me. And essentially what happens is everybody's just kind of hanging around for the last few hours. Of course, they had quests leading up to it to kind of build up the story. And then finally, it blacks out at the last minute. And it shows the beginning of the Final Fantasy XIV A Realm Reborn cutscene, intro cutscene, which is... Damn. What actually happens during that war. So everybody goes to war with the Garlean Empire, which is, you know, named after Garland, the bad guy from Final Fantasy 1 and Final Fantasy 9 to a degree. And you know, all while this is happening, Dalamud opens up. Basically, it opens up and reveals Bahamut, and Bahamut lays waste to the entire countryside and to the entire world. Yeah, so it's like, if you can imagine Napalm, but across, like, vast fields of, you know, environments, that's what Bahamut did. And he basically destroyed the entire world. And Louis Sois, in desperation, tries to seal Bahamut thanks to the prayers of everybody in the world. You know, they were praying to the 12 gods of the world.
Back up a second. Yeah. So we got no other summons. No Ifrits, Alexander, nobody comes, just Bahamut.
This specific one is Bahamut. This very specific event has ties with Bahamut.
Hmm.
And basically, and that plays into, and there are summons, the Ifrit and all those guys still exist in 1.0, but for this specific world-ending event, Bahamut is the main huge guy. And essentially, Bahamut destroys decimates the entire world. And, you know, Louis Sois looking to try to capture him, uses all the prayers and faith and whatever energy to try to lock him, but he escapes. And he continues decimating everybody. So Louis Sois is forced to basically, like, put the heroes in this sort of vegetative state or of some sort and dies, or quote-unquote, maybe, in a process. So our heroes, which include the people who used to play 1.0, this is what happens in the other cutscene.
You said this happened in 2012?
Yes.
All this shit? Okay. Did Final Fantasy Realm Reborn launch in 2012? Or
it launched in 2013.
So these people were unable to play Final Fantasy 14 for a few months?
For a whole year.
For a whole year, okay.
Mm-hmm. Because what they were doing is they were also kind of changing the server infrastructure, whatever software is actually running the game, so that way, you know, it ran a Realm Reborn, not 1.0.
And then they had to do betas and run test betas, alphas, because we always, when we talk about game design, we're always talking about betas.
Yeah.
And as you know, being a former game tester, we never talk about the alphas, which change significantly from betas.
Mm-hmm.
Betas are closer to the final release, right?
Right.
In some cases.
Yeah.
And even then, they can be totally...
Yeah. When they released the beta, in close to early of 2013, the game was fairly finished. A lot of people were able to import their old characters, and in some cases, they're even identified as the original Light Warriors. Which,
damn,
they have their own tattoos and stuff that indicated that this character survived the war that happened 5 years ago. They always refer to what happened with Bahamut 5 years ago. It was always an event that happened 5 years ago. And what's interesting about the storyline is, because for some reason, no one remembers what happened back then. No one remembers what happened 5 years ago to actually get to that point where Bahamut gets released and all that stuff. The specifics of it. Nobody even remembers who the Light Warriors were.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, so it's as if everybody's wet memories got wiped out. But essentially what happens is, 5 years after the war, that's where all our adventurers popped up. All the original Light Warriors, all the 1.0 players, that's where they pop up 5 years later.
So then you got the guys like you that are new.
Right, that just joined in. So you have this kind of connection then between the two, because for some reason nobody remembers what happened 5 years ago. All they know is that, you know, the world got destroyed by Bahamut.
Okay, so you're in this new fucking world, right?
Mm-hmm.
New world, a whole new world of Final Fantasy 14 around Reborn. Now, let's not talk about the story for a second. I got questions for you this time. So you're a new character customization. I've got quick succession of questions, so be prepared for that, okay?
Sure.
One. How deep is the character customization visually? And then, of course, visually first. Second of all, can you design your own armor? Can you design your clothing? That type of stuff. And third, because that's actually becoming more of a big deal in a lot of games, even fighting games. You know, clothing, customization, that type of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then character customization with, like, classes and jobs and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Go.
So... visually, yes. In fact, there's a lot more options than you would in Final Fantasy XI. You can customize your hair, you can customize your birthday, you can customize what part of that race you belong to. Like, for example, the elves, the Eleven, have, like, the Wildwood elves, and then they have, like, another kind. That determines the base kind of, like, skin color for example, but you can override that if you would. And then, you know, you can customize the height, the kind of nose. Not as crazy as something like, you know, like Skyrim, for that matter. But, you know, but enough so that you can really make your own character. You can put a stamp.
Your own face in Skyrim.
Yeah. I mean, at the very least, you can rest assured that you can make your own character. They even got it to a point where you had like 10 or 15 different voices that you can pick from. So your character has a very unique voice compared to everybody else. You know,
I gotcha.
For your second part, oh, sorry, you were going to ask me something.
Oh, armor. That's what I'm really curious about.
So for armor, there's different pieces of armor. There's probably hundreds of them in the game, right? There's even class specific armor that are exclusive to, obviously, classes. There's also race armor for a specific race. There's also armor that you get by being part of the grand companies. But what you're really asking for is customization. When you get to level 50, you get to unlock this quest for something called glamour. And what that is it'll actually allow you to mix and match different pieces of armor together, the looks of it, and apply it to the existing armor that you have without actually ruining the stats. So, for some reason, you wanted to wear a level 1 looking armor while you're level 50, which is the max level, you can go right ahead and do that. In terms of color customization, you get the ability to dye if you actually do a quest. It's a fairly low-level quest, and you have to buy the dye either in the auction house or have somebody make it for you. But for the most part, you have those options as well for different dyes and stuff. Now, these dyes are consumable, so meaning if you use one, it's basically gone. But, you know, like, what's interesting about it is that It's another form of customization that's really welcome to a game that didn't have any, you know, like, a long time ago. Or they did have it, and it was just a pain in the ass. So,
I gotcha. Now yeah. And then with glamour, that's when you really can start having fun with it. So there you go.
Yeah. And what was the last question you asked me?
Character customization in terms of skills and things like that.
Yes, so all the races pretty much have the same stats. One of the biggest problems with World of Warcraft that they noticed, or any other MMO, is that, you know, specific classes, you'd probably see them mostly, like, you know, like under, like, a specific race.
Or they're broken. Some of the jobs and classes are completely broken. Like, one of the first MMOs I played was Asheron's Call. That game is broken as fuck.
Yeah, well, it's one of the early ones, too.
Yeah.
But one of the things that's really interesting about, you know, 14, A Realm Reborn, is that, you know, like, when you level up, you get to distribute your attribute points, you know, across any of your, you know, traits. Like, for example, if you want to put it in strength, you can do that. If you want to put it in dexterity, you do that. And this is on a per-class basis. So it's not, like, locked for your whole character. Because one thing that you can also do is you can actually change classes on the fly just by changing the weapon that you have in your main hand.
Whoa, so if you're a white mage, you can switch out a staff or a sword and become a fighter.
Yes.
Damn.
Instantly. So now, the biggest problem is, of course, you'll need to have a lot of armor or a lot of inventory space. And a lot of MMOs have this problem of, well, if you want to carry more stuff, you have to buy my bags. And the bags are ridiculously expensive or they're cost prohibitive. They kind of just remove that. And you have, like, an almost, you know, like a pretty sizable bag for both, you know, your armor and weapon sets and your inventory. So they're separate, but they can carry a lot of items in between the two of them. So, yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on then. We got character customization. We know the backstory, like both developmental and story-wise, of this game.
Mm-hmm.
So let's move on to a couple gameplay questions. How about that?
Sure.
Okay. So first and foremost, this is going to make me sound like a fucking hypocrite.
No.
Which is fine. No. This next one. I'm not a fan of grinding in our MMOs. Even though I'm a fan of grinding in single player. But for me, here's my reasoning for it. Grinding in a single player, I know there's a rewarding story if I'm really truly dedicated to the game. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm investing in the story that I am. There are exceptions, you know, like Pokemon and things like that, because I know there's other rewards, but it has to be rewarding. And I don't feel MMOs, because of their, you know, they just keep going aspect, the grinding isn't that. And I think that's my problem with MMO. Because my problem with the MMO has always been, you know, not an engaging story, kind of a world with generic NPCs that only sell you shit. So is this game grind heavy? Is it grind heavy?
No, actually, I was talking to Ted about this last night, or actually maybe the night before specifically. He was asking me, so should I get these quests? Should I get these quests? And I said no, because he's like, you know, because his, you know, as an MMO player, his idea was that let me get all the quests that I need, and I'll do them all at the same time. And I said, but how about the other classes that you're leveling? You know, now. This is really hypocritical of me. I do not like leveling jobs in Bravely Default. But in this game, leveling a job is a joy. And this is interesting.
But to be fair, though, I'm sure it's a different type of system. Because let's go back to Bravely Default for a second. In those early stages of the game, enemies only gave you, what, one AP?
Mm-hmm.
One job point?
Yeah.
Yeah, leveling up jobs. I have mastered like 3 or 4 jobs per character in that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it is a pain because, you know, later on in the game, when you start getting to like level 14 is the max in Bravely Default, right?
Right.
13 and 14 are 5,000 job points. But at that point in the game, you know, you're leveling up with like, you're getting like 200 job points per battle.
Right, right.
But that's still a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So with that said and done, is it a different system?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So
it's not hypocritical because, you know, you have different style of job systems in other games too.
Yeah, this does not have an AP system. In other words, when you change to the job, you don't have a personal job, you know, it used to have that actually. In 1.0, the classes had a separate level than your person. Which increases the complexity of it. To no end. Okay. In Final Fantasy XIV, they went back to how it was in 11 and have all the jobs and all the classes, for that matter. I'm trying to call them classes because jobs actually denote something else entirely. Classes in this game are based off of experience. So if you're a level 1 archer, then you're a level 1 archer. Like, you level up to level 2 and you gain experience to gain levels in your job, in your class. And then when you get to a specific level, level 30, specifically for that job, or class, keep saying job, you can equip a secondary class to unlock your full job. For example, if you get to level 30 archer, and you level, if you also grind your marauder all the way up to level marauder or pugilist, I have to check that. One of these classes to level 15, there's a specific one, you will unlock a job. that's kind of like where it gets complicated. The jobs are basically the classic designations for the light warriors classes. In other words, warrior, white mage, bard, black mage, paladin, you name it. They're all there.
And they have those typical designs, like Black Mage kind of has that hooded up top hat type shit.
Now, I haven't gotten to that point yet, so I can't really say.
Wait, what?
Yeah. I mean, it's a high-level game. It's a high-level kind of game you're talking about. So, I haven't gotten to level 50 to kind of see other players do that. And to be honest, I'm just so busy doing my own thing that I barely had enough time to actually look at other people's armor. You know, I'm just so busy in the game. But to answer your question, though, with regards to questing, this is the only MMO that I've actually cared a lot about the lore.
Ah.
You know, because one of the things that they really do well is they try to involve you in the world a lot more than most MMOs. So while you know that thousands and millions of other people are playing the game and experiencing the same thing as you, for some reason, nobody out there is like willing to spoil the game for you. In other words, kind of like tell you like, oh yeah, so this is what's going to happen. Even in dungeons, they don't tell you exactly what to do until like, you know, until you get to that point and it's like, oh, by the way, you know, you have to kill the other guys and stuff or else we'll die. And, you know,
they're not like, there's a plot twist.
Yeah, something like that. And a lot of people are pretty respectful of, you know, of newbies and stuff. You just need to have a keyboard. That's like the key thing. But yeah, I mean, level progression's really fast. I mean, it's also partly because there's the tutorial is actually stretched across the first 20 levels of the game. So you're learning as you're still playing the game, and it opens it up slowly. So the entire world is not open to you right away, because they know that if they do, you'll just get overwhelmed. So, and in fact, a lot of my advice for a lot of people would be follow your main quest all the way up to 20. Don't even deviate, because you're just going to confuse yourself a lot more. Because the game really opens up after level 20. You know? And level 20 only takes you, like, less than 2 weeks, pretty much.
Really?
That's from, like, a day, like, an hour or two of gameplay a night.
And the quests aren't stupid, like, in World of, like, the early...
Oh, they're still there. They're still there.
Oh, kill, you still have to collect five bones of a cat.
Kill five, you know, kill five things. But the rationale is pretty good. It's valid. It's like, you know, they tell you the reason why you need to kill them and stuff like that. And, you know, it's... Because the biggest problem they have in WoW is every quest giver is just this wall of text. They don't give you, like, a reason why you're doing the quest. All the reason is in that wall, that window. That's it. You accept or you deny. That's it.
And people say the WoW lore is that great. I don't know.
The thing that's different about the WoW lore and the Final Fantasy lore is that the Final Fantasy lore has a lot more emphasis towards you as a character in a grander story. In WoW, you are a number. You are a number that's part of a bigger struggle.
It's the Nazis of MMOs, basically.
Nah, I wouldn't call it Nazis, but it's more like, you know, you are, you know, your contribution helps for the greater good of the many. Whereas in Final Fantasy, you know, like Final Fantasy 14, A Realm Reborn, it feels like the world is revolving around you, even though, of course, it's not, you know.
And do you need to go on group raids, or can you play this by yourself?
To a certain extent. And again, this is why I say it's important to play the game all the way up to 20. When you hit level 15 and you get the ability to use the airship, you'll be traveling from three different main cities. Outside of these three main cities are three dungeons. And through storyline, they're actually going to force you to play through the dungeons. What's interesting about the dungeons is that it will actually alert everybody in the party that there's a newbie there. It's not going to identify you as the newbie, but it's going to identify everybody and said, hey, by the way, there's a newbie here. And if you complete this dungeon in record time, not record time, but like a short time, they'll give you more experience than normal.
Very cool.
Yeah. This encourages a lot of high-level people to actually go back down and go back down to lower levels and participate and help, you know, the older players out or the newer players out.
Gotcha.
In the previous version of Final Fantasy 14, A Realm Reborn, this was a problem. Essentially, what happened was that it would take you hours to actually find a party. But they added this thing called the duty roulette that actually allows high-level players to participate in low-level dungeons and gives them extra experience in addition to the extra experience that they may get by completing a dungeon with a newbie in it.
I gotcha.
So it almost stacks up like multiple times. So there's a lot of added incentive for helping people out, which is great.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm. And in a way, this is your introduction to raiding. You know, it's a very light, you know, kind of way to do it. But you feel like, okay, this is what you've been building up to. All this skill, all this experience that you pretty much had throughout this entire adventure pretty much leads up to this. You know, to these moments. And there's a lot of them. You will have a lot of those moments.
Awesome. So let's we've talked about all that already, right? Good, mm-hmm. Some good gameplay and stuff like that. Let's talk about a little bit more gameplay. Mm-hmm. Combat, which is essential. Uh-huh. We've got to talk about combat.
Yeah. Well, what about combat are you curious about?
So, yeah, combat. Let's see. So, is it... What kind of system is it? Is it turn-based?
So, it does have this kind of, you know, like... invisible active time battle system. I would probably compare this a lot more to Final Fantasy XII. More than anything. Mm. Now, the reason I compare it to that is because everything is practically inspired by it. The targeting lines that identify who you're targeting is there. The targeting lines that identify who is attacking who is there. And it's actually incredibly useful when you're trying to identify what your tank is at, or your warrior or paladin or your you know, Gladiator or what have you, is actually attacking. Very, very useful. It's also like, it also features like a very streamlined kind of hotkey system, because what happens is they use the L2 and the R2 triggers to actually modify the actions on the D-pad and the face buttons of your DualShock. I'm playing this on the PS4, and it is so incredibly useful to actually, like, you know, to actually use the controller, that I can't imagine actually using a keyboard instead of, you know, a DualShock controller.
And it makes up for the lack of hotkeys and things like that, I suppose.
And it gives you a lot of options. I mean, the game gives you a ton of different kinds of options in order to kind of customize it, you know, like kind of, you know, move one option, you know, one action to another bar and all that stuff. It's really kind of intuitive. And you can tell that, you know, Square Enix, you know, has done this, you know, dance before. This is their second MMO on a console. In fact, they're probably the only ones that have pretty much figured out how to do MMOs on a console in a very good manner. So,
I would argue DC Universe Online is a solid one. But that's, I don't know if that's really an MMO.
I've never played it, so I can't really compare, but this is a game that, that is intuitive, gives you a lot of customization and options for, you know, for even just having one character on server, you know. That's one thing that they have, is that if you're just only going to have like one character on server, you can pay instead of $14.99, $12.99 a month, and save some money. Whereas, like, if you're going to play multiple characters on the same server, then you have to pay $14.99 for it. And that's kind of like the standard fee. And they've justified the subscription fee in a way that, you know, it's that makes sense, right? Like, basically what they're saying is that, hey, you know, we're packing in a lot of content every time you're paying monthly. And they have. They're introducing a lot more primals. Primal boss battles. I'm not gonna get into that as a spoiler.
What the fuck?
And a whole bunch of other stuff. Like they've been adding a lot of new armor sets. There's a rumor that there's a new class that's being introduced. I mean, they're not done. They may be done with releasing the game, but they're not done with adding new stuff with the game at all.
Fantasy 14 still being built. It's an MMO. Mm-hmm. Now let's talk about some stuff that you brought to my attention.
Mm-hmm.
Gold Saucer, Magic Tech Armor, Costa del Sol.
Yeah, I'm actually in Costa del Sol right now.
Okay.
In the game. And it doesn't have the music of Costa del Sol, but it's basically like this beach resort. I think there's a Lalafell. It's one of the shorter people in the game that's actually running it. And a lot of the quests have something to do with it being a resort. So, like find 4 dancing women at the beach. Or something, some ridiculous things
like
that.
Do you get, like, swimsuits and shit for your character?
No. I mean, you're still a warrior. You still have, you know, they don't, you know, but it's like, it's those kinds of quirkiness, you know, that I like about Final Fantasy over any MMO. It knows how to make fun of itself sometimes. But,
that's, I think, why I like the Japanese RPGs over a lot of Western ones. Because a lot of them have that quirkiness, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, even the Tales game, they always have like a steam bath place. They have a fucking, you know, they have a world of cat people. I mean, some, you know, some gamers are just childish, but I don't know, you know, you don't have to be super serious all the time.
Right. Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, so there's a lot of callbacks to Final Fantasy in this game, and they know it. They know that a lot of people play a Final Fantasy game for the callbacks. Biggs and Wedge are in the game. Cid is in the game. Magitek armor you get after the successful completion of the main storyline, so there's that's your incentive. That's your mount, basically.
Did you complete it?
No, I'm still level 32, and I need to go into another dungeon. So, I mean, that's my homework for tonight. But thankfully, like, I have a healer that will party up with me, so we should probably get that done pretty fast. I am fighting a primal tonight. That's part of my storyline. And I did, like, a really crazy dungeon last night, where it was, like, basically kind of like a haunted house. And it was interesting. It had a storyline as well. So, and it is part of the main storyline. It's not filler at all, which is great. The build-up is pretty fantastic, too, because the build-up to that, you were doing a whole bunch of, like, nonsensical shit, and you couldn't find, like, because you were looking for this one character, right? And you're doing all this nonsensical shit, and they're like, oh, well, I guess we don't really know, you know, what we're doing, so we're just gonna, you know, send you back. And then when you get sent back, all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, everything is relevant again, and that's where the seriousness of the storyline kicks in again. So,
and that's how Final Fantasy has, you know, it's not just this game franchise have always.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Maybe, you know, maybe that's why, in some ways, people. I think I like 13, but I think 13 was a little more serious than the rest of them.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of them have always had that quirkiness, you know?
Yeah.
Even though there's a dark undertone, sometimes very bleak undertone to those games.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there you go. And one other thing, Gold Saucer.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about that for a second.
Future patch. What do you know about Gold? They do have several mini games. They do not want to confirm whether there's going to be chocobo racing. Yeah, so, I mean, it would be interesting if they did have that. I don't know where in the world they're going to shove that game, that world in, that town in, or what have you. But, you know, I'm pretty sure they'll find a place.
Is it going to look like the old Gold Saucer, or is it going to be a little bit more...
I think it'll be within the style of 14. But that being said, you know, it's still a good callback, you know, if they're going to have mini-games and whatnot. I mean, there's a lot of callbacks to this game. Some of the limit breaks are basically taken from the Final Fantasies. Like Cloud's...
Like what?
I want to say Cloud's Omnislash is in this.
That should be, like, a high-level one.
Yeah. But limit breaks are only available in dungeons, so, I mean, there's that, too. But, yeah. So,
well,
yeah.
Final Fantasy... We're really... This is a long episode, guys.
I know.
I know. Do you want to continue talking? I'm kind of still interested. Do you think we should move on to Tomb Raider?
We should move on to Tomb Raider, and I want to kind of start off by saying that, you know, congratulations, you did beat that. You did beat that last Saturday. Mm-hmm. So tell me what you don't like about the game.
What I don't like about it? The leveling system in it feels tacked on.
You mean the skill progression and whatnot?
The skill progression.
Okay.
And even the weapon upgrades to a degree. Because, you know, like, there's some that are cool, like the fucking, the silencer and stuff, but I was, you know, sneaking around just fine with the arrow. I think the skill progression, too, most of them felt like, you know, it didn't feel like something like, they're a game that, I think, when you do a level system like that, the game should be built around that to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
To a degree. I think that's where a game like Arkham Origins worked well.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you still had the items that you did at the beginning of the game of Arkham Origins, Batman Arkham Origins I'm speaking of, I don't think you would be as successful, because that game does progress harder. I don't feel the enemies really got harder. Well, they did get harder, but not to the point where you had to rely on leveling up.
Mm-hmm.
It was more like Uncharted 2, where, you know, they added a little bit of armor, that type of thing.
Right.
And I did like the fact that you did get items in the context of the story, like the bow that, you know, get from that guy's name, big guy.
I don't recall his name. I know what you're talking about, though.
Yeah. That bow, the fire arrows. I like how they give you items as the story progresses, like in a kind of a Metroid-style way.
Mm-hmm.
But I just felt that level-up system was just tacked on. And it didn't need it. It felt like, you know, to add depth to it. And I think a game like that, you know, like Uncharted doesn't have a level up system. That's fine. And I think, you know, that's great. You have exploration. You should have exploration too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But do it in the typical Metroid style where you kind of, you know, get the rope arrow, you could go back to more areas, that type of thing. You don't need to level up per se.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's that type of thing. Or, my suggestion would be, if you make a sequel, look at something like Symphony of the Night that has a... And I know that's a 2D game, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But Symphony of the Night progressively got harder if you didn't level up in that.
Right.
So, I just felt it was tacked on, but it doesn't... Look, I'm making it a bigger deal than it really is. It didn't kill the game. And my overall opinion is it felt tacked on, which I mean, you know, it doesn't need it, but it doesn't break the game.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. It doesn't break the game. It doesn't hurt it, really. Well, it just felt like something that was unnecessary to me.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. And I would not say it is not my game of the year last year. That's still Zelda, Link Between Worlds. So, but I will say it is a damn good game, mm-hmm. otherwise.
Hmm.
Beautiful game, great story, great reboot of a franchise that I usually despise.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when I despise something, I despise it, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm probably one of the most stubborn people you meet. And I will say that. So, and real quick, you know, in the previous recording, I'm making this real quick. I want to hear if you guys think that, as Alex is challenging me with good reason, because I do need to get caught up in my gaming, I think Alex in some way needs to experience Zelda. So, he will disagree, right?
Sure.
But I want to hear what our audience says. Lewis and Mike,
or anybody else out there who hasn't emailed yet.
Yeah, if you haven't emailed, please tell us that Alex should play Zelda, A Link Between Worlds, and if you have to, borrow it from Ari.
Hmm.
At the very least. If you do that, okay?
I don't even see Ari that often anymore, but okay.
Okay. Or, you know what, folks? If, you know, send us what you think. Deal, Alex? How about that? We'll see what
it says. Sure. It's, email us at sociallinkpodcast@gamerhorizon.com so that, you know, we can tally it up and see, you know, what turns out. Should I play through Zelda? And if so, who's going to give it?
Yeah. I wish I could send you my copy. I would actually mail it to you, but it's digital.
Fail.
Yeah.
Digital fail.
And if I had my college money, I'd buy you a fucking... Like I did with Super Mario Galaxy 2, which you're like, I won't buy it, but you ended up loving it. Remember?
Yeah. Even though I only played it once.
But you liked it better than Galaxy, though.
Yeah, the level design is noticeably better. So.
Okay, anyway, back to Tomb Raider, though. Tomb Raider is a damn good game. Characters are really well developed. I like the fact that you can pick up little, you know, books, not books, but like notes that they write and learn more about them.
Mm-hmm.
Like Reyes, you know, her daughter's parentage, her daughter's father, who her daughter's father is, which is hinted at in an earlier cutscene too.
Yeah.
So it is Tomb Raider's just a phenomenal game in a lot of respects. You could tell the Square Enix presence is in that game too with the cutscenes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they're there. This is not what's funny about these Square Enix Eidos properties is that. That Square Enix feel that you get from maybe a Final Fantasy or something. Not the lightheartedness, but just, like, maybe a... How can you describe it?
I don't know.
There's a Square Enix kind of design. Like how there's something with Sega games that you feel, particularly older Sega games. You know, I was going to say Sager. but I think that's that on that. But mm-hmm. Tomb Raider's a beautiful game. I played on a PlayStation 3. Didn't play any definitive edition.
Mm-hmm.
But it's... I can only imagine what the fuck it looks like on PS4, but it looked gorgeous on my PS3.
Yeah.
Very good looking.
Mm.
You know, lush landscapes, the end area where it's all snowing.
Yeah.
You know, and here's the thing I will say about this game. I have to do a couple of comparisons to
mm-hmm.
just because, you know, this is what... It does things better than the Uncharted series. Because here's the thing about Uncharted. I love that series. I love the characters. But their end sequences, not the endings, because the endings are always entertaining to watch, the ending movies.
Right.
But their end sequences kind of fall short compared to the rest of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
Like, look at Uncharted 2. Herald one of the best games of this past year.
It ends abruptly.
Yeah, well, there's a sequence in Uncharted 2 where you know, Nathan is running from a breaking bridge, and that falling apart bridge only lasts, like, not very long.
Mm-hmm.
But then you got something like Tomb Raider, which is so fucking, and I don't like, I hate the use of the word epic because I'm a English lit major, and I know what an epic really is.
Right.
But I will say epic in this case, because that's the only word I can think.
Mm-hmm.
And that ending is fucking epic.
Mm-hmm.
It is, wouldn't you agree, that ending sequence?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Come on, you gotta show more. Dude, I'm enthusiastic, and this is your fucking game of the year. It's so brilliant, isn't it? So dramatic, so fucking well done. Final boss battle feels really well done and dramatic. Mm-hmm. And then the way it ends is an homage to the original Tomb Raider.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, if there's like any one thing that they could have done that they would have probably like ruined it for me, it was probably like that, that ending, like, because it needed to kind of like definitively say, look, everything before it is nothing compared to like what we're doing right now, you know, like, and it's great because they did that with that ending, like. Just how bombastic that whole last level was and how crazy it got. I mean, it's crazier on the PS4, but I remember how it was on the PS3. And even then, it wasn't, you know, a cakewalk. It was still, like, really, really exciting. So, I mean, yeah, it's great. It's one of my favorite endings last year, and actually partially one of the reasons why I gave it Game of the Year, because it was such a satisfying end to a video game that I can't really remember it. That, you know, that I've ever had that sort of experience in a very long time in a video game before.
And again, back to the Uncharted comparisons, I think, and you gotta agree with me, Uncharted kind of throws everything big at you in the middle parts of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Tomb Raider, you know, doesn't do that. There's some heavy action sequences, but nothing like, you know, there's that great sequence with the burning castle in the middle of the game.
Mm-hmm.
That you think is the end of the game, that's really well done.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't. But that ending, they save everything. They save all the dramatic stuff for the end. And I wish, you know, like Uncharted would do that. Like save the train fight for the end, you know, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or the helicopter sequence or something. It just seems like they don't, you know, they fizzle out at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And Tomb Raider didn't. Tomb Raider did not fizzle out.
Right.
It just didn't. So I love Tomb Raider in a lot of respects.
Mm-hmm.
Great game.
Awesome.
Great game. Read Alex's review. I agree mostly, except for the tacked on stuff.
Aw. All right. Well, I think that about does it for this episode. I think if anything, it puts like that exclamation point or period and definitively saying that, yeah, by the way, Square Enix is back.
Let's talk. I want to talk to, I know you kind of got to go, but two more minutes. I need to talk about something about this.
Okay.
The future of Square Enix. Let's look at some of the other stuff they've done too in the past year. They're one thing they've done consistently well in the last few years have been ports, you know, and they're still doing ports. We've got the great Final Fantasy X port, right?
Mm-hmm.
Got a Kingdom Hearts port. They did great Star Ocean port. They've done a lot of great ports, you know, even on the iPhone and all that. They're very, very good at ports. But I think they, you know, they're kind of slowing down on that, and they're coming out with new stuff. The future of Square Enix looks right. What do you look forward from the future of Square Enix?
Right now, since Final Fantasy XIV is my addiction, new expansion.
And they will come up with it. It's kind of a given.
It's been a given.
I think every year, other than WoW's like, it's like Magic the Gathering. In the card game world, you have Magic the Gathering that's always consistent. And then you always have a big card game that fizzles out, then there's a new one. Right? Mm-hmm. That's how MMOs work. There's always WoW. Do you think Final Fantasy XI is going to fizzle out?
You mean 14?
14, excuse me.
Considering that it's got 2 million subscribers and it's a growing community, I don't think so. The only thing that they have to do is they have to basically like make sure that the gold farmers don't, you know, don't affect the gameplay of everybody, because I get messages from gold farmers every single time I log in, and that's...
Explain what that is.
Those are people who basically sell their services to sell you in-game gold for, like, real money.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, someone who... But what else are you looking forward from the future of Square Enix?
that's really it right now, because I mean they really need to prove to me that this is a direction that they are really dedicated to. I mean, obviously, you know, notwithstanding Tomb Raider, a sequel to Tomb Raider, but
which we'll probably see at E3.
Maybe not. I know that they're mostly going to focus on 15 because they do not have anything announced for the next year or so. I would imagine that they will announce that 15 is probably coming out in 2015. That's my guess. And that's that for me. How about you?
I am really looking forward to 15. I know you have some reservations for it. But if let's put this in perspective. If it's still on the path of what we're getting now, that's a good thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, 13. I know you were skeptical when they announced 15 last year. Well, re-announced it, I should say.
Yeah. By the way, it's not versus 13 anymore. It's just 15.
But I think, you know, if they do what they're saying they're going to do, because from what I've been reading, you know, it's going to be an open world, you know, with the if they can mix what makes Oblivion great, but what makes the Final Fantasy great, because that's what I'm getting the vibe from. Right. I think we'll get a brilliant game. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you know not Oblivion, but Elder Scrolls. Because what makes Elder Scrolls so great for me was that you could explore, except for Skyrim. Listen to older shows for that.
Jeez, yeah, yeah.
But what's great is they have this great lore. But what's always been lacking is your character is just some guy. I'm a prisoner. Oh, I'm about to get my head chopped off. That's about as much backstory as you get.
And that's the same thing in Elder Scrolls Online.
Yeah.
You're a prisoner.
You're a prisoner again?
Yeah.
Why the fuck are you in prison? I would like to fucking know. Give me... What did I do? And then why am I freed? Am I a bad... Fuck those games. Anyway, you know, with 15, though, if they can mix that with a deep story, which I believe they can, it'll be great. Wouldn't you agree?
Mm-hmm.
And good combat.
Which yeah.
It looks like it's a real-time combat game.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, again, like they have a pseudo-real-time combat system in 12 and 14 that works. So if it's something like that, I wouldn't mind it too much.
And yeah. I'm also looking forward to Bravely Default the second.
Mm-hmm. Not so much.
I know. If they can lift the... I think you'd enjoy it if they resolved some of the... If they made it less old school, but I
don't think they're going to do that.
I don't think that's going to happen.
No.
I think, again, let me preface this. The Bravely Default games are targeted towards guys like me. And look, guys like me, I'll preface this as well, are not better gamers. We just have a different style of taste. You know? Mm-hmm. We come from a different era.
Right.
Gaming. And I love that type of stuff. I love grinding. I love that shit. But that's me. Bravely the second, I'm sure it's going to get a U.S. release. There you go. And then, of course, Kingdom Hearts 3, I'm excited for. And I will say I am also excited for Square's Tomb Raider. There's nothing else from the Eidos side? No, like,
nope.
Hitman or anything?
No. That's it. Oh, well, maybe a Hitman game in June. They'll announce it.
Hitman game. What about...
I want them to do a Hitman game... You know, like the same care and service that they did with Tomb Raider. I think it's about damn time for a reboot.
I think that would be awesome. And then Kane and Lynch, too. I always liked the concept of those, but they've always been poorly executed.
Well, you have Grand Theft Auto 5 for that, which does a much better Kane and Lynch than Kane and Lynch does. Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, fuck Kane and Lynch.
Yep. So, all right.
So,
well, that about it. Does it for this episode of the Social Link Podcast. Be sure to email us at sociallinkpodcast@gamerize.com. We'll always read your emails and respond to them and whatnot. And I want to say we had an email, but I don't think we have enough time to actually cover it for today. So, any final words before we go?
Well, next week we'll return to our regular schedule format. I'm sure you'll talk about... I'll give them a brief preview. What are you going to talk about? Do you know yet or no?
More than likely, I'm going to be talking about Bound by Flames, Transistor, and more Final Fantasy XIV.
Okay, and I'll be talking about some old school gaming a little bit. You know, I'll talk about a little bit of Tales of Symphonia and BioShock Infinite.
Awesome. All right.
So there you go. And Mario Kart. Mm-hmm. Well, no. Are we going to record before Mario Kart?
We'll see. We'll have to figure that out. And just as a reminder, if you are on Twitch TV, bookmark us at Twitch.tv/GamerHorizon. Anthony, I'm probably going to do a live stream tonight. You should probably watch.
I will try to be there. I don't know if I can, but I will try to be there.
Tonight is, of course, April 22nd, which by the time you listen to this, it would have already passed. So, let me know tonight.
Wait, April? It's May.
May, I'm sorry. Oh my gosh. This you know, this year is just flying by. So, alright. So until next week, we'll see you guys later.